This is Sunday Skate on Sports Radio WEEI.
The first time in 39 years, the Boston Bruins have won the Stanley Cup.
Talking Bruins and the NHL.
Sure, old-time hockey.
Like it is sure.
Yeah.
With Ken Laird from the Mutt and Callahan Show.
What a bunch of criminals. We ought to be in jail. That's all there is to it.
WEEI.com Bruins writer Matt Kalman.
Leave the killer out.
Sunday Skate is brought to you by Wise Snacks and by Star Market, the official supermarket of the Boston Bruins.
Beast is great. You know, we got a lot of losses.
Lace them up for some Beast Talk right now on Sports Radio WEEI.
For the third time since 1992, the Boston Bruins are on to the Eastern Conference Finals. It's such a big event. Matt Kalman is in for a weekday edition of Sunday Skate, the podcast. We're also usurping Zero Pucks Giving on the channel and putting our podcast on Dale's podcast channel.
Oh, jeez, he must really be happy about that.
Well, he doesn't know it yet, but he's going to find out secondhand through the wind. Yeah. Anyway, so.
Well, we had to record this because, I heard this morning Jerry Callahan said I had no personality, so I had to come in and make sure I mark my territory.
Well, in defense, he said all of us, three of us.
Because they want to have a Patriots tight end on every show? Yeah. Is that how it goes around here?
Yeah, Wiggy's the party starter, so he's going to be able to. This Sunday for 2 hours, but the Bruins win. They win it in six games. Matt Stradamus is here. He wants to praise himself, even though before the playoffs he predicted Columbus, Winnipeg in the Cup Finals, and he won't bring that up today. But go ahead. I'll allow you now to praise yourself.
I'm glad you remember that. I don't remember that. Do we have any proof of that?
Well, that was a preseason pick.
It was a preseason pick, absolutely. And I came closer than you probably thought with Columbus earlier in the year, for sure.
You did.
But I think. After doing Sunday Skate this week and talking about coming up Game 6 and Torts obviously panicking with his guarantee and then throwing the shade at Tuukka, but, you just looked at the game and rewatching that Game 5, you could really see that the Bruins had pretty much solved everything Columbus had in the tank as far as their attack, handling their defense, and clearly handling Bobrovsky, which we didn't know if they were going to be able to do. And Brandon Carlo predicted it after Game 3, and I pretty much predicted it after Game 5 that they were going to close this out, and they proved me right.
We'll get to Marchand here in a minute. A couple things stand out. First of all, Columbus finishes 0-10 on the power play.
Yeah.
For a while in the middle parts of the series, it was a special team series. They were kind of stalemated everywhere else. What happened there? Just Brandon Carlo being Brandon Carlo, Tuukka?
Exactly. Well, Tuukka for sure. Yeah. We know that. But then, the defense and everyone kind of stood up. I mean, even with Achari coming out, guys like Nordstrom, who people were criticizing all year long, why is he in the lineup? These are the times of year where guys like that stand out. And whether it's him or on the PK or Backes 5-on-5 now, you're getting the contributions from the guys that were being criticized all along, and it's great to see. And there's clearly a strategic maneuver there by Bruce Cassidy. Earlier in the year, when they were having the injuries on defense, normally you would think, I'm going to pack it in and be conservative. They got more aggressive with their PK, and they were able to survive having all those defensemen out. Well, this time around, they maybe had fallen back a little bit in their aggressiveness, but here they were in the against Columbus. They decided to attack them the way Columbus was attacking their power play.
And Tortorella didn't adjust, or somebody in Columbus, whoever's coaching that power play. We've been crushing Cassidy for lack of creativity.
Yeah, there
Bruins
was no
power play.
There was hardly any creativity there. I mean, they were just mostly dump and chase. They were having tough times with their entries, and the Bruins really put forth more of a grinded out effort there.
And they shut out for the series. Camp Atkinson, Josh Anderson, Bjorkstrand, Foligno, these guys had zero goals in the series.
Yeah, they were getting a little more friskier in game six. And early in that
couple
game.
Posts. Anderson's,
exactly.
Yeah.
And if that game, if those posts go their way, and that I would be very worried about a game. As much as I predicted game six the Bruins would win, I don't know if they lost game six, if I would have had them in game seven, the way these players were coming on, the way the Bruins' first line had to come on when they were struggling earlier in the series.
In fact, the one Anderson, it went off the crossbar, I guess, 13 minutes to go, third period. Mm. This is still a 1-0
game. Tuukka got a piece of.
Anderson's falling down. I don't know how much of it he got.
Yeah.
It looked on the replay like he got enough of it. That is the save of the game.
Absolutely.
Maybe the series.
Right. There's been a lot of saves like that, I think, especially in that game five. That you look at game five, it was basically the Tuukka show, especially down the stretch there in those closing seconds. I mean, McAvoy gets a lot of credit for that blocked shot, but there were some ridiculous giveaways in that game, and that's one where you say, do the Blue Jackets look back on that this summer and say, what the heck happened there?
How
they really let them off the hook.
Char was awful in some of those sequences.
Right?
Right, and Marchand, too. Marchand had, 13 seconds to go. He doesn't get the puck out, and McAvoy's got to come through. So, team effort, to be sure. I mean, early in the series, you had Coyle and Johansson.
Yep.
middle of the series, the top guys got going.
And then Krejci.
And then Krejci and even
amazing.
DeBrusque and Backes chipping in. So that's what it takes to win playoff series, obviously. Marchand in particular, though, was quite a story in this series. In round one against Toronto, you would have thought he would have been more on display.
I know.
They're playing a Canadian team. Going back to the regular season, you were ripping David Schultz and these guys in Canada for pearl clutching. But he kind of kept his behavior in that series.
I kind of feel guilty because after that series, before this Columbus series started up, I said, well, except for the fact that Charlie McAvoy had two fights in his career, they were both against Columbus, there isn't really much of a Boston-Columbus connection here. What's going to fire these guys up? And will Marchand be able to play without having that extra fire under him? And he even said, well, guys like Dubinsky and Jenner, they're going to be there. They're going to try and do that. And next thing you know, he's snapping Cam Atkinson's stick. And the whole country of Canada is going nuts. And next thing you know, he's giving Harrington a bop on the net, and people want to put him in jail. And here he is.
Well, Marchand went with a Marshawn Lynch approach at the postgame for people that have probably heard it by now. First with Sportsnet and Kyle Bukauskas, who's their on-ice reporter.
Thanks, Jim. Brad, you said after the third game of the series, there's no panic in the room. What can you say about the way your group handled the next three games and ultimately advancing to the conference final?
We did a good job.
Tuukka Rask was saying, this core isn't getting any younger. What do you make of the opportunity that lies ahead of you?
It's been fun.
So I see where this is going here. I'll ask you one more about your line. It got back together. You had said the chances over there were just starting to bury it these last few games. What kind of zone are you three in?
We're good.
Thanks. Well, that was worth it, Jim.
And then he did it with you guys in the dressing room afterwards.
What are the short answers, Brad?
Next.
How good does it feel? It's been a while since you guys have been to the conference finals. How good does it feel to be back?
It's good.
Where'd you get that outfit?
China.
What was the difference for being down 2-1 in the series to win the last three?
We won.
When Tuukka is part of the way he is, how much does that help you guys up in terms of what you're doing?
What time?
Do you have a bet on how few words you're going to say in this?
Maybe. What's been able to separate the way you guys have played on the road in the playoffs?
I don't know.
Anybody say anything interesting to you in the handshake line?
Nope. You feeling a little crispy tonight?
Oh, yeah.
Why is that?
It's 'cause.
But I had no idea. I guess this all starts from the skate incident, right? Like, he was upset
well,
and he asked him about the...
There was... On the one hand, it was obviously kind of unprofessional. Your guys warming up for the playoff game. Playoff game is a totally different animal. I have things that I want to ask some of the players about that don't have to refer to the games or the sport at this point.
Yeah.
But you don't do that now, whether it's a practice or a pregame skate or anything in the playoffs. You let them be in playoff mode. So whether this Kyle guy has a relationship with Brad or not, to think you're going to throw a joke in at him while he's warming up 40 minutes before a playoff game, it's kind of ridiculous. And then when he does that skating off, obviously he's ticked about it. If you don't have time between then and the next time you see him to touch base with
him and apologize or whatever
and figure that out, how do you then request him as your post game?
Part of it's Marchand's fault because toward the end of the season it was Wacky Brad where he was he was Mr. Jokester on Twitter and you feel like he's always open.
Yeah, but playoff mode is different, especially for someone who's not around the team all the time. I mean, but like I said, no one should be joking around with these guys. They you have to let them initiate it at this point of the year. You don't do that, especially right before a game. So fine, but yeah, he left it. He got his little bit of revenge there with the short interview. Yeah. And this Kyle guy, he did a good job of brushing it off. He had that great line that said,
I know where this is going.
So it was fine. What I don't understand is then he does this Marshawn Lynch thing, like you said. It's not that big of a deal. I mean, if I was there, would I be pissed? Of course. I mean, I've actually been in that situation numerous times. Oddly enough, I was a young reporter, maybe one of my first Red Sox games ever, and Nomar Garciaparra pulled that same thing. And
the one-word answers.
And the Herald actually let me use... it was supposed to be a sidebar. It turned into kind of a column that no one is not usually allowed to write, where I basically said that if he was so happy that he went 4-for-6 or whatever he was in that game, why did he act as if someone had run over his dog? That was the famous lead. And so clearly if you're there, you're going to be annoyed with him. But the people in Canada right now are acting as if he just spit on the prime minister or something. The guy actually went out there and spoke to the media, at least whether he was giving you good answers or not. This was his choice. When John Tortorella goes up to the press podium and calls people stupid, they laugh at it and talk about what a great coach he is. This guy goes out and at least, no, not necessarily disrespectful in the way that he wasn't insulting anybody. He just chose not to expand on his answers, and they're acting as if he killed somebody.
He had a point to make. He got it across. I wonder if this continues into the next round.
Yeah, it'll be tough. It'll be tough for him to do that. It's going to be a lot of access and a lot of asking for him. Yeah. And for him to hold that up, I don't think the Bruins are going to let him do it.
Well,
I think,
was part of the factor the shot to the back of the head of Harrington too? Because I imagine, locally he got some heat for that.
Sure,
there debate about it for sure.
Even on Nesson, they were saying how stupid it was, which is rare. So yeah, I mean, clearly there's a whole thing. I think that he's, as opposed to most of these guys, he's reading some of this stuff. And I guess I just heard that he did have like a terse exchange after game five. While he was at the podium with one of the reporters about criticizing his game and waiting for them. So it's clearly not just a CBC thing with him right now.
Yeah.
You just have to wonder what he thinks he's going to get out of it if he keeps doing it this way. I mean, but you know, he's a guy who can't win either, right? Because like you said, he's on Instagram. He's being funny. He's on Twitter. Him and Tory Krug going back and forth. Everyone's loving him. People are, you know, most people with an objective mind are saying, this is one of the elite players in the league right now.
Yeah.
He's right up there, Hart Trophy candidate. And then no matter what he does, though, they're going to turn it back on him. You know, again, this bop to the head thing wasn't worse than anything you see in any scrum in the playoffs. You watch St. Louis and Dallas, they're creaming each other after every whistle.
Yeah.
And it's always a focus on him. And then even the stick snap thing, he answered the questions about it, made a joke about the skate sharpening. It should be done then. They keep trying to define him by these other things rather than the guy who's a 100-point player.
Well, maybe Bruins fans should be happy. He's ticked off and he's back into the ball of hate world. Tuukka Rask, of course, the star of the series, although afterward, when his interviews, he really deferred to his defense. He just talked about us defending hard. Well, so he's a team guy.
He typically does that. I mean, that's. I don't know where this idea that he's some kind of selfish, you know, unthinking robot came from. I mean, when people say, "Oh, he threw his defenseman under the bus after some games," well, he's asked questions about what happened in front of him, and so he tells you an honest answer. He's not going to say, you know, he never says, "Oh, I gave up this goal and I had no chance for it." He'll always say he has a chance to make the save, but clearly he breaks down the play in front of him and he tells it like it is. Most goaltenders do, and that's what you want out of these guys. He's one of the guys, and that's what he does. You know, if a skater, if Bergeron misses an open net or something, you know, Brad Marchand is not going to tell you that it was a tough play or make an excuse for him. It's just the same way, and so the guy is certainly a team player, and clearly, you know, he's going to share it. You know, how many those 2 years where they didn't make the playoffs and he didn't have any defense in front of him? You know, Chara was aging and they didn't have any youth coming up behind him. Dennis Seidenberg skating on one wheel out there, and all these terrible defensemen that are deteriorating before his eyes. Yeah, he had a lot to say about the defense because he wanted it to be better. Show me one goaltender. You know, Marty Brodeur had Scott Stevens and Brian Rafalski, and you name it. Every great goaltender has a great defense in front of him.
Which is, you know, even further highlighting the point that Chara has had, for the most part, some, you know, tougher moments than we've seen from him ever in his career that I can recall.
Yeah.
Throughout a playoff series. He's not bad all the time, but, you know, he's limited in certain aspects, and the longer these series go and the playoffs go, you do wonder if it's going to, you know, age will catch up with him. But highlighting, because of that, how important McAvoy, Brandon Carlo, certainly, he's become emerging as a star. And Grizzlick, and even Krug. I was thinking about Krug.
Yeah.
He was active, and he was very visible in Game 6. But this playoffs, he only has one goal. He's not like a standout,
right?
But he's not been a liability.
Well, that's
either,
just it. You're not watching a play at this point saying, in fact, with all the six defensemen, you haven't had one game where you said, oh, my
right,
God, where's this gaffe coming from? What kind of dumb decision was this? So
yeah, maybe a couple Clifton moments, but maybe a John Moore moment here or there. But
exactly,
for the most part, they've been rock solid.
And I think with Krug, I think it's a lot of it had to do with the opponent this round, and they're a tough team to kind of, you know, go crazy on because they're swarming at you the way they are, and so he didn't have a lot of space, and so he took the space that was given to him and became more of a, you know, Carlo obviously gets the credit for shutting down Panarin, but Krug is out there. Panarin has line mates, and it takes a pair to shut down a forward line like that. And so you go, you just say that, you know, you look at it and say, maybe we're a shutdown pair at this point in this series, because if we shut this line down, Columbus isn't going to go anywhere.
All right, now back to Tuukka for a second, Matt. Do you want to respond to DJ Bean?
Oh, God.
Who put out on Twitter, after the series clincher, how short is the leash on Tuukka Rask? And obvious shot at some pundits, And I'll fully admit, you and I and
I own that.
Were at the start of the postseason. I think it was a legitimate question.
We never once said Tuca was bad. We never predicted Tuca was going to fail.
Right.
We said if Tuca is shaky, if Tuca has an off night, if the workload got to him, he didn't play seven games in a row in the regular season, I don't think.
Yeah, why is that such a shocking
thing
to
ask? So it's not a shot to say that the goaltender who led the league in goals against a save percentage for the first half of the season, who was signed here to be the number two, would get in there if there was a shaky moment. And I know I said it because people on Twitter confirmed that I said that, yeah, maybe he gets pulled in a game. He'll be back in there the next game.
You did say that.
That's the way it goes.
Pete and I took the other side of it.
Right.
It's very possible they would go with with Halak.
Right. And I didn't rule that out either. I mean, there's no shame in changing goaltenders in this day and age. And I think if you look at it right now, there are some teams – Toronto Maple Leafs wish they had a backup that they could have turned to maybe change the tide in a series. The Islanders probably think that they maybe should have switched goaltenders. Look what happened to them with Leonard, and they decided to stick with him.
Yeah.
Had to pull him in that game. This is a two goaltender league now, and if you have two goaltenders, you can use them both just like you would use all six of your D and all four of your forward lines.
All right, so let's go through the list of other talking points now. The other skepticism, I guess, was Pastrnak through the middle point of this series.
Right.
There was a debate even in the game. He scored a goal and had an assist that early on the power play, whether he played a good game or not, then
sure.
Whether he was injured. The top line obviously had a terrific game there in Game 5. Not so much visible in Game 6, but all in all, they shut down Cam Atkinson, another top line they went up against. Are they playing best line in hockey level as they move on to
Eastern
Conference Finals?
I think it's all relative to the playoffs because, just like these other lines are being shut down, they're being slowed down too, A, by the fact that they're focused on defense, and B, because these other lines are so good, and this is the way it goes in the playoffs. They're going to have these nights where they break out, and there's going to have nights where they're quiet, and you need to get the secondary scoring, and that's where the championship teams get their stuff from. Last year, you can make the argument Kuznetsov should have been the Conn Smythe, and going into the playoffs, who looked at him as the first line guy, right? It was always Backstrom and Ovechkin, and then they make that switch, and he starts contributing. So you're always going to get these contributions from other guys. We saw it 2011, Rich Peverley. When Nathan Horton went out, all these guys come through. That's the way it works in the playoffs. And I think they're playing top-level hockey for a first line in the playoffs, absolutely.
Although at a point in the series, it should not be forgotten, and I guess it will not be, that Pastrnak was demoted to line
right.
three.
Which
is a significant move from Bruce Cassidy.
Yeah, I mean,
only
David Pastrnak knows if that was the reason why he got going. But Bruce Cassidy, you can't fault him for trying. I mean, we sat here criticizing Babcock for not changing anything for seven games. Bruce Cassidy juggled things up. Pastrnak went back on the third line, on that first line by the third period of that game, and then looked like himself again a little more. So obviously it jostled him somehow.
Officiating has dominated the NHL playoffs, not just
always does, right?
This local, well, I don't know, not to this extent. I mean, obviously the Vegas incident was a major one, and San Jose is still playing, and they got a Game 7 coming up. But the Bruins have been on the bad end of four calls for the first two rounds. That have gone against them.
Right.
I don't really think any of them were unjust, I guess. It's just, given the nature of NHL replay, the fact that they all went the other way, you start to wonder a little bit.
If you're going back to the Hyman interference, that seems pretty clear-cut that they went the other way.
That's the one of all.
But obviously the net and the puck in the net is just by the rules. It's a dumb rule.
The goalie interference last night early, I think, with Nordstrom was pretty clear-cut.
Yeah, pretty clear. It was
he got pushed into him a little bit on the initial skate contact.
Yeah, he probably could have got out of there quicker. And then, the Seth Jones goal?
The Seth Jones
goal. Yeah, that we never saw the puck.
We kind of saw the puck.
Cassidy kind of threw it out there the other day that he still hasn't seen the puck in there. That's his bitter
side. Little jab.
But, that's another part of the playoffs, right, guys? I mean, I've written this a few times now. This team knows how to deal. They talk about adversity during a season, blah, blah, blah. It's such a cliche thing. I tune it out. But at this stage, when you have all these things that do go against you, whether it's officiating or just these weird bounces, that they play through it is pretty amazing.
I do love that Rick Nash quote. I think it was before Game 7 of the Toronto series, he told somebody from The Athletic, what amazed me about the Bruins being in there last year and watching them handle a Game 7 was just nobody was fazed by it.
Right.
I think that speaks
well. That's
a lot
just it. I mean, you talk about San Jose-Vegas, terrible call, terrible break for them, and they gave up
four goals on the five-minute.
So what the Bruins, that would not happen to the Bruins, basically. They might give up a couple. They're
not
giving up
3-1 lead in a third period.
Right, exactly.
That's just it, too.
Whether
they
it was
win the game.
Third period of Game 5 or the first period of Game 4, mayhem, chaos. can't control it. It's not their style, right? But they seem to actually thrive in it, which is kind of totally contradictory to what you think about with the Bruins. They don't want to play fire wagon hockey, everybody going crazy, but it seems to be working to their favor.
Now, to look ahead a bit here, because we got Carolina coming up, and as we tape this, we're not quite sure when the start times are, right? That's not
right.
been released.
We're not sure about that. We're not sure about what Charlie McAvoy's status is.
He's in the middle of his hearing, so whether he's out for a game or not, obviously that could be a big decision, you know, because if he's out,
huge decision.
And they lose game one, think about the Columbus series when they took advantage of the Jackets' rust. They won that first game, and that's obviously proved to be key after they lost a couple to follow that. But be that as it may, the Bruins are going to come in here as a favorite again.
Right.
It's a wild card team. A lot of people haven't really followed Carolina very closely. I'll consider myself mostly in that category.
Not as closely as Don Cherry, that's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't watch much of the Islanders series. You were a big believer in New York this year.
Yeah, they just stopped
and
scoring.
They totally stifled them. Two even-strength goals in four games
Amazing.
In that series. So what is Carolina's identity? How do they match up
with
the Bruins?
Carolina's going to be tougher because of the active D. You know, we talked so much about Jones and Werenski and how they dominated both sides of the ice for the Columbus Blue Jackets. But after those two, the rest of their D were stay-at-home D. They weren't pushing the play.
Yeah, Kuchet had a couple blasts, but that was it.
And it was wasn't necessarily, you know, it was within the play, the cycle. It wasn't necessarily on the rush. And I think Jones, especially, he kind of tapered off toward the end of the series. It was really only Werenski.
I think he got fatigued. He was playing 30 minutes a night. How could that not come back to play?
Absolutely, and that's another, you know, fault on Tortorella, I guess, if you look at that. This figure, he can't handle it, but this is a team with four or five guys that push the puck like this. Hamilton, Falk, Slavin, Pesci, they all do it. And DeHaan's like the one stay-at-home guy out there, and he's moving the puck better. He's a physical presence. They have physical guys up front, Niederreiter, guys like that, that can crunch the body. So it's kind of you're going from Toronto's style to Columbus' style to this hybrid now. Can you adjust and figure how to counter the combination of the speed and the defense being active and the physicality? It's difficult, and it comes back to the goalies. If they can get to those goalies, that'll make it a lot easier. And you should be, on paper, you should be able to get to these guys.
Peter Mrazek and Curtis McElhaney, who's 35 and has won his last three, the first playoff start he ever had.
Yeah.
And he wins it, and then he rolls on to a 3-0 record with a 1.56 goals against average. So they have a choice as to who to go to.
Right.
And this was a legit tandem for them in the regular season.
And you hope that maybe that, even just that uncertainty maybe throws a wrench into the Hurricanes a little bit. They're so confident right now, but maybe there's a little bit of controversy swirling there. Maybe there's factions that maybe hopefully favor one guy over another, and maybe that kind of throws them off their game a little bit in addition to this week off they're going to have.
Well, Dougie Hamilton will be the guy that is taking a lot of the storylines to start the series, right?
Dougie Hamilton, who actually did his own one-word answer press conference not too long ago when he was unhappy with a media member.
Yeah, a Boston media member?
A Boston media member, yeah. So.
Oh, who was that? Do you want to expand on that?
Oh, you probably could find him at the snack bar.
Okay. Oh, okay. Well, he I saw him patting the head of, what's his name from the Islanders, who had patted the head of one of their goalies in that series.
Oh, yeah, right. So, right. So Brock Nelson. Yeah.
Yeah, so he was feeling a little jiggy and... He's an interesting guy. 2011 first pick of the Bruins, ninth overall. They trade him in 2016 to Calgary. They get three picks for him,
right,
which turn into players that have not yet seen the ice from Boston.
DeBrusk.
Other than
right.
Oh, was DeBrusk in that?
Yep,
or was that DeBrusk, the Lezon?
No, DeBrusk, Zboril, and Sinishin.
But those all three, those were the three.
Three in a row.
But those all weren't back
in
the Dougie
Hamilton. I see what you're saying. Right.
Because two of them were second.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Sinishin was the one that they got, technically.
I don't know which one is which from the...
Anyway.
Right.
They got three picks for him.
Yep.
He eventually got shipped to Carolina.
Right.
He's got 18 goals this year, but I noticed in the minutes in the postseason, he's not been their major workhorse.
Right.
Slavin and Falk have been the guys
Absolutely.
That get most of the minutes.
That's the top pair there. And Dougie Hamilton, I think the world saw him bail out against Alex Ovechkin, and including Rod Brind'Amour, the coach there, and that's why he's kind of scaled back those minutes. And that'll be something the Bruins might be able to take advantage of. I mean, I'm sure... Doug, they'll be in Dougie's ear.
I think the crowd will, too.
The crowd will absolutely be in. He'll probably get booed. I mean, he got booed the first time he came back, but then he was with Calgary, so it was only one time. And now with Carolina, no one really cares, or at least didn't care until now. So I'm sure he'll be the focal point of the crowd and the Bruins. Just based on that Ovechkin play alone, I'm sure he'll hear a lot about that. I'm sure he'll hear a lot about anything that he ever did embarrassing when he was here.
Did we ever get an official why he turned down the Bruins' offer?
I think... More than anything, it was Claude. It was just guys being hard on him. He
didn't like Claude's the way Claude used him in the system.
He didn't like the way Claude used him in the system. He didn't like Claude's discipline. You know, I think Just a quirky guy.
He was always that way. That's the best way to explain it. He never really quite fit with his teammates.
And you know what, too? It's not just him. There's been a few guys that just don't fit here personality-wise, and it's not a knock on the Bruins at all. It's a knock on these guys that can't seem to, you know, bury their egos or their quirks to fit into this group that obviously has had so much success.
Has anybody publicly ripped him on the current team? Have, like, the Marchands, the Bergerons ever said, like, come out and say, you know, took a shot?
Yeah, they stayed away from that. It was kind of more like along the lines of when Iginla went to Pittsburgh, where, you know, well, you know, he didn't want to be here, and we'll just prove him wrong. And so now they have the best chance to prove him wrong, although Calgary kind of proved them right also by shipping him out so quickly.
Yeah, in a way they did. The two main Finns on the team, and I know that's important to you because you call them all marshmallow soft.
That's right.
Sebastian Aho, their top line center, and Tuvo Teravainen.
Yep.
Who was, I think, their second-line right wing.
Yep.
Teravainen won a cup with Chicago and has been around for a while, 21 goals this year. And Aho is a second-year guy, 21 years of age, 30-goal season.
He's amazing.
Both play the penalty kill, too. So,
right.
I mean, these are two-way players, good players that are
right.
going to be... They're
going to be dangerous, and that's where that first line, that Bergeron line, is really going to be a shutdown line against that guy. Because, you know, he could go off, and we've seen him do it before, and... It's going to be difficult.
Aho has 4 goals in the playoffs. Warren Fogle, his left wing, has 5.
There's another one. See, a guy that comes out of nowhere.
Rookie, 23 years of age, second-year play, third-round pick, I should say. So can Bergeron, is that the matchup? And do they get Aho from start
depends.
To finish? And Justin Williams is also on the line.
Yeah, I mean, they've been mixing up their top six a little bit. I mean, Williams was playing with Aho a little bit, then... It seems like Teravainen and Niederreiter are the wings, and they just switch the centers here and there. So it's because Jordan Staal is revitalized. We can't forget him. I mean, he might be the difference right now, because who thought that he could still play this way? It's almost like his brother. When his brother was at the end of the Carolina stint, he thought he was done. He went to the Rangers. He wanted to stick a fork in him, and then they went to Minnesota and found his game again. This guy didn't have to change teams. He's just revitalized. He's
only 30, but it feels like
he's 1,000 exactly.
Years,
yeah. And so because he won the cup and played all those games with Pittsburgh in those early years. He's been amazing, so that's going to be another tough matchup. That'll probably be the Krejci matchup, or more likely the Corrali matchup, actually, now that I think about it out loud here.
Staal was big. I covered the Penguins-Carolina series in 2009. They swept them in the Eastern Conference Finals the last time Carolina was there. Staal was very good that year for Pittsburgh in that series against Carolina.
Sure.
Now he's flipped the side.
He's huge, and he's been great in these playoffs. He was actually maybe the biggest difference maker among the forwards against the Islanders. So, obviously they're deep up top, just like the Blue Jackets were. And they're going to have to, you know, I think the key here, to keep talking about the matchups, but I think the key here is that the Bruins have stopped worrying about the matchups. The Corrali line.
Sort of, although if Bergeron shut down Atkinson,
right.
as he did Tavares.
Right. Well,
or, you know.
Because the Atkinson was moving lines, so I think Tortorella was moving them around so much. That you really did stop kind of focusing on it. There were plenty of times where even Coyle's line, never mind Corrali's line, was out there against one of the top lines. It had to do sometimes with face-off positioning and things. But Bruce right now, he's got the lines just like he wants, just like the way he probably drew them up when the playoffs started. And I think he kind of just trusts them all to do pretty much almost, you know, 90% of every matchup.
Michael Ferland has been out for them.
Now he's looks like he's going to come back.
Yeah, how big of a factor would he be?
That's a huge factor because... I mean, it's hard to believe they've gotten this far without him. I mean, he was such a key player for them. I think he had almost 20 goals.
17
in the regular season. And the consummate power forward. Remember at the trade deadline, we were talking about how he was one of the guys that maybe
the Bruins
or any of the contenders would take a run at. The Maple Leafs certainly could have used him. Other teams could have used him. And
he had the hit on Johansson, which knocked him out
right away.
He
only got hurt because he had to defend. And everyone said David Backes shouldn't have fought. And look what they did. He knocked Frohman out. So... In the end, it might end up paying off because maybe he's rusty coming in here. Maybe he's still banged up.
Is there a little emotion there? The Backes, Ferland?
Yeah, I'm sure there will be. I'm sure these things don't get forgotten. I mean, we know in the playoffs they don't necessarily target each other for fighting-wise, but there'll definitely be some looking out for the numbers and looking to throw some big hits there, and there'll definitely be some emotion in that.
The bottom two lines, I don't know these guys that well. Maybe you do. Lukas Wallmark, a Swede, third-line center.
Yeah.
Andrei Svechnikov, Jordan Martinuk.
Well, Svechnikov, obviously a first-round pick, top three pick last year, a guy with a lot of offensive upside, a guy who in a different year would have been candidate for the Calder if it wasn't Pettersson all the time. And
he had 20 goals this year.
Yeah, Wallmark, I believe, is more of a checking type
defensive
type third line. Yes, I think
Brock McGinn is the third guy on that line.
Yeah, McGinn's got a little. He's got just like all the McGinn boys do. He's got that bulk and that tenacity up front.
Greg McKegg, their fourth line center, had the game 7 double overtime goal to beat the Capitals, the defending champions.
Yeah, the fourth line gets a little vague for me, but like you said, they contributed, so you have to pay attention to them.
You know, just the fact they beat Washington. They were down 0-2 in that series.
Right.
They tied it up, then fell behind, got bludgeoned 6-0. They're down 3-2. They come home and win a 5-2 game and then go to Washington and win that game 7
in overtime.
In double overtime.
It's amazing.
So this team obviously should not be taken lightly, but it is hard to look at them and say the Bruins aren't serious favorites here.
Well, you can
particularly the goaltending edge, right? The Carolina's power play is not that special. They've been struggling, actually. It's a good defensive team, good PK. Like you say, they can play a little bit of both ways. But if the Bruins don't get past the series, it's a major disappointment, right?
Well, I was just saying to someone else, it's not a major disappointment in the big picture because you want to go a round deeper every year. So that's what you've done, right? First, second, third round the last 3 years. But based on the way the chips have fallen and the fact that you didn't face Tampa, you're not facing Washington now, it is a huge opportunity here that they should take advantage of, and not to disrespect the Carolina Hurricanes at all. But like you said, the Bruins should be seriously favored over them, and it should not be an easy series, but it really shouldn't be a long series either.
Rod Brind'Amour is their coach. Second year with them.
First year. Peters,
this is rookie
Peters
year?
Was there, yeah.
So, you know, I know when they hired him, the talk was this is a risk. Like, he's unproven. He was an assistant for a long time, but, you know, as far as a head guy.
Yeah.
But it seems like his players love him.
Yeah. Right? I mean, I had one mole in Carolina say that it was a great move because they knew that he'd have this rapport with the players. And that's nowadays, that's like half the battle, right? To have the players play for you and go through a wall for you the way he does. And the fact that he was around the team, it's just kind of weird to see a guy that looks like that he's been through the 600 world wars.
Yeah.
And he has playing in the NHL to put on a suit and be a coach. Other than that, he looks awkward, but there's no reason why he can't be a great coach, and he's done it.
You know, other than that, you know, the talk of the bunch of jerks from Don Cherry is going to be a storyline in the series, right? I mean,
now they're a bunch of front-running jerks,
right? That building's huge. They drew 19,000 to fit in there, so it now.
And can we just say this about Cherry too? He criticizes them that they've been him and all of his apostles up there in Canada. The team shouldn't do this. It's not right. You're rubbing in the faces. You better not try doing it in the playoffs. So then when they don't do it in the playoffs, he goes, "Oh, you see, they knew they were wrong." What are you talking about? They do.
With any chance they break it back out?
I think they will at some point. If he goes down there for the finals, maybe they'll do something for him.
Yeah, why? If they're going to go all in, they should really just keep embracing it, right?
As long as they're selling T-shirts.
What else? I mean, anything else that's...
Well, let's just say... let's just talk about this McAvoy hit. We don't know what the decision's going to be. We're guessing a game, probably, minimum.
I
what
think
do you
it's
think?
A game. Should be a game.
It's a game. Not a vicious hit. And
Not a vicious hit?
Not a vicious hit in the intent. If you watch that play, and you watch the way the Bruins are playing defense right now...
Yeah.
When they dump the puck at the Chara's corner, which they're doing more and more, he needs to come over. He needs to make a hard play. Otherwise, that guy is going to get behind both of them and have a breakaway. Josh Anderson's a giant. Next to Chara, he doesn't look it, but he's a giant. He's a hard-hitting player. He's had no problem bopping guys in the head the whole series. Not that McAvoy was trying to pick the head.
Right.
He's coming in at that angle. He's coming in full speed. The guy's got his head down ever so slightly. I'm not saying I'm giving him a game because he made the head contact, but there was no intent. And so when you look at the rule, it's enforced properly, right? There's a minor penalty. Or a match penalty.
Which is strange.
There should be a middle ground, absolutely, but there's not. And so the refs enforced it. They left it up to Department of Player Safety to handle this now, and he's probably going to get a game, and it's unfortunate. But to say that, and obviously you saw in the handshake line, Anderson didn't look too annoyed.
No, he didn't. But Foligno was upset afterwards and said, "I'm not going to sit." He held his tongue.
Well, I don't know what they want them to do, though, because if it's a match penalty or it's a two-minute penalty and with nothing in between, you can't call anything more than a minor.
Only
there.
Call it a match. If that's all you're.
If you call it a match, then you're saying that he really tried to hurt him, and you can't. It's a hockey play still.
You're in control of yourself.
The guy has the puck, and he's coming in at this angle, and they're both going at full speed.
But a couple of tweeters said this, and I generally agree. The officials, although they're different every game, set the tone by not penalizing Anderson for the elbow to Backus's jaw, which was equally as egregious earlier in the series.
It was pretty bad. That was also, though, a battle, and I'm not sure that. It was Kukin, actually. I'm not sure if he...
Oh, was it Kukin?
Yeah. I'm not sure if he was intending to elbow him in the face either. You know what I mean? The intent is Matt Cook when he comes up. That's what I always think of. The guy comes up behind you and clobbers you when the puck's gone.
Right.
These plays are all
last round. Nazem Kadri.
Nazem Kadri, exactly. Come in flying at you with his stick up when you're not expecting it. These plays are that are expected. I didn't really have a problem with them not looking at the back of the thing. They called the 2 minutes, and they can't take a chance that if he comes back 2 seconds later. If you throw a guy out of the game, it's supposed to be for injuring the guy. If the guy just doesn't miss a shift, then how do you justify that?
That should matter. The league should not be looking at the degree of the injury to hand out the rule. The rule involves
the injury, just like the suspensions. They take it into account every time.
Well, then I'm not saying whether it's right or wrong. You know.
It's just the facts.
Okay. Well, if they lose McAvoy for a game, what is their
Their options are John Morris, Stephen Kampfer, and I think you probably go with Kampfer at this point because whatever
and Carlo bumps up to play with Chara,
and Carlo plays with Chara, and probably Krug and Clifton, and then Grizzlick and Kampfer, or you know you can miss and match. Krug and Clifton played together a lot in Game 6, and they looked all right. You know, I think that calms Torrey down also when he has to play a little bit with the kid who's a little bit rambunctious, and so it worked out fine. I think for one game, if they can survive it, you know, I mean. The way Carlo's been playing, and you're at home, so you can control some of the matchups, and you just got to hope that Chara, you know, if he's playing with Carlo, he should be better, but although Carlo's not quite as mobile as McAvoy to get over and cover, you just got to hope that a couple of days off gets Chara's tank filled up again.
Well, Chara has been so bad at points late in this series. People were, you know, some people were going to say he should scratch him, which is ridiculous. But like I could see limiting his minutes, but then when you
there's
look
no
at the options,
do
how do you do it?
There's no way.
How do you drop him? Even I mean, he's got to play with McAvoy.
The only way you make up for it is have Charlie out there, and Charlie maybe isn't as focused on his own game. He's as he has to be to clean up what's going on over there. And I think there's no doubt that you have to assess what's going on here as the series goes on. You have to make other adjustments, and maybe at some point, depending on how lines are going for the Hurricanes, if it's Grizzlick and McAvoy more, or you just have to just do that and see how and just get by with it. Because, you know, Grizzlick was the best left D they had in Game 5, and the fact that they almost blew that
You hated the guy regular season, so you've come around.
I absolutely hate him. I can't possibly hate him. If I hate him, his father will kick me out of the garden.
Yeah, but you were calling adamantly for a trade at the deadline for a Grizzlick replacement.
Well,
did you apologize to Sweeney today when you talked to him?
I always apologize to Tom.
What was he talking about?
What would I have to apologize to him? I'm supposed to be a Bruins honk. What would I be apologizing for?
And not always. Sometimes you're cranky, Calvin. But what is Sweetie? Just state of affairs?
Oh, yeah, it was just state of affairs. Let's see. You know, he had no comment on McAvoy. Was excited. Thought the team was fantastic.
He and Yarmo went out to dinner. They detailed.
Didn't want to take any victory laps over Johansson and Coyle when he was given the chance.
I apologize, Don, for that. I mocked them openly.
Right, exactly. So,
well, not Coyle so much, but definitely.
Well, everyone gets mocked. I mean, Peter Chiarelli took a lot of heat for Chris Kelly and Rich Peverley at the time. I mean, they looked like nonsense. Rich Peverley had 2 goals or something in his last 19 games going into playoffs, and Chris Kelly had less than that. You know, these things take time, and if the Bruins lose Game 7 to Toronto, some of these things don't happen, and then it all looks bad, you know? So,
well, the players can't look ahead, but I really, I'll admit to a little bit of ignorance with Carolina, but I think this is Bruins in 5. I don't think this is a long series at all. Let's assume that's the case. Let's assume I'm right. There are 4 teams still left in the West as we record this. They're going to be a couple of Game 7s. Is there an appealing or a not appealing matchup there even? I mean, Sharks, Stars, Blues, and Avalanche.
All those teams are tough, man. I mean, maybe Dallas, because I still don't believe in them. They have 3 defensemen they roll, and we saw that with Columbus now. It didn't work against
the
Bruins.
The Dougie Hamilton series to the Tyler Seguin redemption
story. Well, that's the other part. I don't know how much that guy's going to be able to get his nose dirty in the playoffs, you know. So, but those are all tough matchups. I think maybe the Carolina thing is huge to get it done early, like you're saying, get it done in 5, because you're going to need to rest up for those teams. They're all brutal. They're all have their different strengths, and they have physicality, and McKinnon's the best player in the league right now. So.
I kind of think Colorado's going to win the whole West. Last night, that win, who knows? I mean, it could, you know,
they've looked so good, but then they've also looked bad at times. It's kind of crazy, but maybe San Jose, because they're older and they're maybe more banked up at this point, and Jones seems to be vulnerable at times, although he seems to have got to act together, so maybe that's the one of the 4 goalies that you'd want to go at.
Yeah. St. Louis is tough, as you say.
Yeah, St. Louis is just so heavy, and you know, with O'Reilly, and they have these third line. You know, they put this Blake kid in there, never played a playoff game in his life, and he scores a goal, and he had 7 hits or something. And so they're just so deep. It's amazing that they that they stunk for as long as they did during the season.
And if the series is Thursday, Sunday here, the Carolina series.
Right.
Afternoon game Sunday.
That's what it looks like, 3 o'clock.
And then Tuesday, Thursday, maybe back
in Raleigh.
Back in Raleigh. Hey, in that case, we might have a Sunday skate and then wrap up the series a week from Sunday, right?
You have
a chance to end it. What do you think? How long does it go? Deep?
6 probably again. Now that I've seen them actually win a game 6 on the road like they did last night, yeah. I think they can do it. It had been a while since they did that. You know, full credit to Ty Anderson for looking that up on Hockey Reference, that they had lost like 8 in a row or something like that, chances to close out in game 6. So now that they've done it, I think they can do it, and I think the magic of the Hurricanes will run out.
What will you be writing about the next couple days as we get ready for the series? All the things that we've talked about today?
Absolutely. And obviously how they're going to make up for McAvoy missing and if Char is going to be rested and ready to go and more Pastrnak. And I'm sure Brad Marchand will provide us with dozens of words to write about.
I hope so. You want to rip Dale before we go or Jerry or anybody?
We don't need to rip Dale. We're bumping him off the feed, off the podcast
true.
Feed.
That's
so that's the ultimate victory.
That's insult enough.
I'm going to spike the football right now.
All right, well, we're locked in 7-9 again this Sunday for Sunday Skate, the live edition. So you can reach us. You can reach Calvin on the text line, 379-370. Is just hyper-focused on the text. Including you, Felger. We think Pete Blackburn will be in. He came halfway through the last week episode, but that's fine. He's not getting paid at this point, so he
needs to learn how to pull the all-nighter like I did.
No, this week you were well-rested, actually.
Yeah, I was, but I mean, you know, a few weeks ago I was.
And we might be the pregame show this week, so good stuff. Check out Matt Kalman on Twitter and at WEEI.com. He is a machine there, and we will talk to you next Sunday Skate podcast, whenever that may be. You want to do another one after game 1, or is that getting a little...
Yeah, or maybe even before that. We'll see how it goes.
All right, keep an eye out for it.